Welcome back, everybody. Today we're going deep into the book of Genesis.
Oh, yeah.
To explore the stories of Isaac and Jacob.
Really interesting stuff.
We're going to be using Dr. Robert Van Noy's lecture transcript on Old Testament history as our guide.
Should be a good one.
And, you know, these aren't just some ancient tales.
Yeah.
This is real family drama.
Yeah.
We're talking power struggles, consequences of choices that still affect us today.
Mm-hmm.
We got stolen birthrights.
Oh, wow.
We got a little bit of wife swapping.
Sounds juicy.
And even a mysterious ladder to heaven.
Can't wait to unpack all that.
It's going to be a wild ride, so buckle up.
All right.
So let's start with Isaac.
Okay.
Now, it's easy to just think of him as, oh, he's the son of Abraham and Sarah.
Sure.
But we got to think about the context here.
Mm-hmm.
Decades of waiting for a child, a promise that seemed impossible.
Yeah.
His birth wasn't just an answered prayer.
Right.
It was a testament to God's faithfulness. Even when things seem hopeless.
I mean, it really makes you wonder, what impossible promises are we holding on to in our own lives?
Absolutely. And then there's the whole almost being sacrificed by his own father thing.
Oh, yeah.
We went into that in depth during the Abraham deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine how that would shape your worldview.
Wow.
That must have been a defining moment for him.
Yeah. Dr. Van Noy thinks that might be why Isaac was so passive.
Oh, interesting.
Especially when it comes to his marriage.
Yeah, because it was an arranged marriage, right?
Totally orchestrated by Abraham, and Isaac didn't really seem to have much say in it.
I mean, arranged marriages were common back then, of course.
Right.
But still.
It's kind of crazy to think about how different things are now.
Totally different cultural norms around marriage.
Yeah.
But that desire for love and partnership,
right,
that's a constant.
Definitely.
What do you think? Would you have been as passive as Isaac in that situation?
I don't know about that. Right. But what I find fascinating is that this passivity pops up again later.
Okay.
When it comes to his sons, Esau and Jacob. Ah, yes. The twins. With that prophecy hanging over them.
Hmm? The elder shall serve the younger.
Like a ticking time bomb.
Totally. And before we get into all that drama.
Yeah.
We got to remember that God reaffirmed the covenant with Isaac.
Okay.
Just like he did with Abraham.
So the promise of land.
Land descendants as many as the stars.
Wow.
And blessings for all nations.
That's a pretty big deal.
It is a really big deal.
Yeah.
It shows that God's plan is bigger than any one person.
Mm-hmm.
It extends across generations.
But things get a little messy.
They do.
Because Isaac tries to bless Esau.
The elder son.
Even though there's that prophecy.
Going against the prophecy.
It's like he's trying to rewrite destiny.
Yeah, like he's not quite ready to accept that the younger son should get those blessings.
Really interesting. And then Rebecca enters the picture.
Oh, boy.
A mother fiercely devoted to Jacob.
I mean, she's not messing around.
She overhears Isaac's plan, and she's not just going to sit back.
What does she do?
She hatches this elaborate scheme.
She even dresses Jacob up to trick Isaac.
Talk about a mother's love.
Right.
But it makes you think, does the end justify the means?
It's a good question. Was she justified in deceiving her husband?
Tricky.
I mean, she was trying to fulfill what she believed was God's will.
Right.
But it involved a lot of manipulation.
It did.
These stories are full of moral dilemmas.
They are.
Leaving us to grapple with what's right and wrong.
Yeah. And it really highlights the fact that even the people closest to God,
yeah,
they aren't perfect. They make mistakes.
They do.
They struggle
with their choices just like us.
Just like us.
They're kind of caught between their human instincts and their faith, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so interesting, you know, with all the drama, the deception, the human flaws, God's plan still prevails.
Right.
Jacob gets the blessing, even though it was through trickery.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Van Noy even suggests that, you know, God works through flawed people.
Yeah.
Even when they stumble.
That's a powerful reminder that we don't have to have it all figured out.
Yeah.
You know, for God to use us.
Absolutely.
But let's not forget about Esau.
Right.
He's pretty upset when he finds out what happened.
Understandably so.
And he begs Isaac for a blessing, too.
And Isaac does give him one, yeah, but it's not so straightforward.
Okay. How so?
Well, the Hebrew language is a bit tricky here.
Oh.
Depending on how you translate a certain word, it could be a genuine blessing or a curse in disguise.
Whoa, hold on. A curse disguised as a blessing. What does that even mean?
Well, some scholars think it foreshadows the conflict between Jacob and Esau's descendants.
Oh, wow.
Like the Israelites and the Edomites.
Okay, so the ripple effects of this family drama.
Yeah.
They actually play out on a much larger scale.
Affecting the course of history.
It's crazy to think about how these personal stories connect to these big historical narratives.
It really is.
And it makes you realize that every choice we make has consequences that go way beyond ourselves.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So for now, let's turn our attention to Jacob.
hungry. He's on the run from Esau.
Running for his life.
And he's heading to his uncle Laban's house.
Right. But first,
yeah,
he makes a stop at Bethel.
Bethel. Ah, yes. That's where he has that dream.
The famous dream with the ladder to heaven.
Angels going up and down.
It's more than just a cool visual, you know?
Right. It's a powerful image of God's connection to us.
That constant presence, even when we feel alone or afraid.
I've always loved the image of that ladder.
It is pretty amazing.
It's like this bridge between heaven and earth, you know?
Yeah.
Makes you wonder, what are the ladders in our own lives?
Interesting question. What are those moments where we feel connected to something bigger than ourselves?
Exactly. And right after this dream, Jacob makes a vow to God.
Yeah, but is it a genuine commitment?
What do you mean?
Well, Dr. Van Noy presents a couple different interpretations.
Okay.
Some scholars see it more as a bargain.
Like, if you do this for me, God, I'll do that for you kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes you wonder about his sincerity at this point, you know?
Yeah. Is his faith really developing, or is he still trying to manipulate things?
It's like he's still figuring things out.
Right. Still learning what it means to truly trust God.
So the story takes him to Haran.
Right, where he works for his uncle Laban for years.
Okay. And that's where he has all those kids, right?
11 sons.
Wow. Talk about a big family.
They end up forming the foundation for the 12 tribes of Israel.
I mean, that's incredible. One man's family becomes a whole nation.
That's a pretty big legacy.
But of course, with Jacob, things are never simple, are they?
Never simple.
I mean, his marriages to Rachel and Leah.
Don't forget the handmaids.
Oh, yeah. Plus the handmaids, it gets complicated.
Very complicated.
And you know what's funny?
What?
Jacob, the master of deception.
Yeah.
He gets tripped into marrying Leah first.
A taste of his own medicine.
Talk about irony.
It seems like deception runs deep in this family.
Doesn't it? But it also shows how these patterns repeat themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like what we do to others often comes back to us in some way.
Yeah, it makes you think about the choices we make.
How they affect not just us, but the people around us.
Speaking of choices, Dr. Van Noy mentioned this interesting tidbit from a JD's review he cited.
Okay.
Apparently, someone wrote a whole book of limericks about Old Testament stories.
Limericks.
Limericks, including one about Jacob.
You got to tell me this limerick.
All right. It goes like this. Jacob worked out his full stint to win Rachel with never a hint that aught was awry, and Laban so sly said, "Now, newbie, read the fine print."
That was pretty good.
Right. Poor Jacob, always getting tricked.
So what stands out to you about Isaac and Jacob so far?
What about you?
Well, for me, it's that reminder that God is always faithful.
Yeah.
Even when we mess things up, even when we make bad choices.
Right.
God's plan keeps moving forward.
It's a pretty comforting thought, isn't it?
It is, knowing that even when we screw up, God's still working.
Absolutely. And it makes you think about family, you know.
Yeah. All the complicated dynamics.
Yeah. The favoritism, the jealousy, the ambition.
Things we still deal with today.
We do.
Maybe we don't steal birthrights or swap wives anymore.
Hopefully not.
But those underlying emotions.
Those are still relatable.
So how do we navigate those complexities in our own families?
How do we make choices that honor both our own needs and the needs of the people we love?
That's a big question. Okay,
oh.
Before we wrap up, I got to ask what happens next with Jacob.
Well, that's for another deep dive.
Okay.
But I'll leave you with this thought. How do the stories of Isaac and Jacob challenge your understanding of faith, family, and destiny?
Ooh, that's good.
Keep exploring these stories and see what you discover.
Yeah, it really does make you think about the long game.
It does. How our choices affect future generations.
Like setting off a chain reaction.
That's why these stories are so powerful.
Yeah.
Help us understand our own lives, but also the bigger picture of history and faith.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Isaac and Jacob, what are some key takeaways for our listeners?
Well, I think the biggest one is the enduring power of God's covenant.
Yeah.
Despite all the human flaws, the twists and turns God's promises stay true.
They do. They really do.
They're fulfilled across generations, you know, reminding us that his plans are bigger than our mistakes.
That's definitely reassuring.
It is, knowing that even when we mess up, God's still working things out.
What else stands out to you?
The whole family dynamics thing.
Yeah.
I mean, these stories are so raw and honest about favoritism, jealousy, ambition.
Stuff we all still deal with today.
I do.
And those kinds of challenges, they force us to make tough choices.
They do, like Rebecca and Jacob.
Right. Having to decide how far they'd go to get that blessing.
And those choices have consequences that go way beyond the immediate situation.
It's a good reminder to think about the long-term impact of our actions.
Not just for us, but for our families and our communities.
Absolutely. And I think these stories also show us the surprising ways that God works through imperfect people.
Oh, yeah.
Isaac and Jacob weren't perfect.
Far from it.
But God still chose them, worked with them, and fulfilled his promises through them.
It's a powerful message. It's not about being perfect. It's about God's faithfulness.
It's a good reminder that our flaws don't disqualify us from being used by God.
They don't. Sometimes they're the very things that allow his grace to shine through.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
So as our listeners continue to think about these stories, what's one final thought-provoking question we can leave them with?
How about this? How do the stories of Isaac and Jacob challenge your understanding of faith, family, and destiny?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Do they inspire you to embrace your own journey with all its complexities?
Mm-hmm.
To trust in God even when you make mistakes?
Yeah.
To really consider the impact of your choices, not just for today, but for the future?
Those are definitely some powerful questions to ponder.
I hope so.
And I hope this deep dive has given our listeners the tools to do just that.
Me too.
Well, thanks for joining us on this journey through Genesis.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll see you next time for another deep dive.